the spirit of reconciliation, Mylomer Australia acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to the elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today. Welcome to My Conversations, Mylomer Australia's podcast series. These podcasts are written and produced by our Mylomer support nurses for people living with myeloma, their family and friends. We aim to deliver interesting and up-to-date information on myeloma in a portable and convenient way through our podcast shows.
Welcome everyone to this episode of My Conversations, a Myeloma Australia podcast. My name is Emma-Jane Furphy and I'm the Victorian Senior Myeloma Nurse at Myeloma Australia, and I'm very pleased to be your host today. Complementary medicine and alternative therapies are a multi-million dollar industry in Australia. More patients than ever are using complementary and alternative therapies than ever before. It has been reported that patients underreport the services and medicines that they use. Often in practice, we see that there appears to be confusion around the differences between complementary, alternative, and integrative therapies. Today, we're lucky enough to have Gail Rowan, Senior Hematology and Medicines Information Pharmacist at the Peter MacCallum Cancer Centre in Melbourne, on the show. Gail's main area of practice and interest include the treatment of hematological malignancies, minimisation of anti-cancer therapy-related adverse effects, and education on the safe use of anti-cancer therapies, especially oral therapies. Gail works in many leading national cancer pharmacy groups and has been certified as a specialist cancer pharmacist by the American Board of Pharmaceutical Specialties. Welcome to the show, Gail.
Thanks, EJ. It's great to be here.
So can you explain to us what the differences are between complementary medicine, alternative therapies, and integrative medicine?
Sure. Many of these terms are used interchangeably a lot, and I think that does lead to confusion. But if we define them strictly by what they are, complementary therapy is something that we're using in combination with our standard therapy. So if we're talking about myeloma, these would be the therapies that the doctors in the hospitals are prescribing for the treatment of the myeloma. And a complementary therapy would be one that we are using along with that, usually to help wellness. So it may be to decrease the risks of side effects or to help the patient feel better during the therapy. So it's complementary to the conventional or standard therapy that they're receiving. And alternative therapy is not one that we actually see a lot, because this is where a patient chooses to use this therapy instead of the conventional therapy. So we don't see them very often, because those patients have often opted out of the usual treatment groups. Mm-hmm. So we wouldn't see an alternative therapy, but this would be where they would be using it instead of the recommended conventional therapy. Integrative medicine is really a little bit more like complementary therapy, but it's where the medical professionals are using a combination of our conventional therapies and, I guess, non-conventional therapies together. Integrative therapies are normally more along the lines of the physical therapy. So they can be things like acupuncture or massage. They're not often what we would consider ingested or taken therapies, but occasionally they are. But they're used as well as the conventional therapy that we're using in a known and studied way. Mm-hmm. So really, all of the terms are interchangeable to a degree, depending on how the person is using them. And also, some of the therapies can be used in the different ways as well. So what if a patient is using a therapy and not using the conventional therapy as well, then it's an alternative therapy. But if they're using exactly the same product, but they're using it as well as using the conventional therapies that our doctors are prescribing, then it would be complementary, because they're using the two of them together. Complementary therapies are not normally aimed at treating the disease although there may be some lay evidence or, you know, I guess non-professional evidence that they have activity, but most people are not using them to treat the disease directly. They're using them to either augment the therapy they're on, so the conventional therapies they're on, or to, as I say, to alleviate some of those side effects and just increase their wellness during the therapy.
So, Gail, what are the factors that you feel influence people to use complementary or alternative therapies in cancer or myeloma treatment?
So I think there's two. Again, we need to separate the complementary from the alternative. And as I said, people who choose to use alternative therapies are usually people who are opting out of the conventional treatments program fully. They may come and see the doctors and they may be seen through our clinics and see the hematologists, but then they choose not to follow the conventional treatment path, and they will routinely then opt out of our system for at least a period of time. And what we sometimes see with alternative people is their belief system is they want to try these alternative and what they may see as more natural therapies first to see if they can control their disease in that way. We often see these people then come back into the conventional systems once they've been out there and trialed other therapies. As for what factors influence people, there's been a lot of studies around this, and there's a number of different things. Some people, the main reasons people want to use complementary therapies is, again, normally around wellness. So they want to decrease the side effects or the perceived bad effects of the therapy that they're going through. So certainly with cancer therapies as well as myeloma, but cancer therapies very much have this perceived idea of being very toxic, which many of them are. Many of them aren't, but many of them are very toxic. So people are often using the complementary therapies to decrease that toxicity, often to they want to boost their immune system, so they want to give their body the most potential to be able to help fight or help work with their conventional therapies. It may be wellness. Sometimes it is around hope and that feeling of being able to do something for yourself, because it can be, as you know, EJ, it can be very confronting when you go into the medical system that you lose a lot of control, and being able to take some of that control back with some of these therapies is what we see a lot. So those are, I guess, some of the personal reasons why people will choose to use them. We do also often see people who they actually really are not worried one way or the other whether they take the therapies, but there is an expectation or an outside influence where they may have family members who are, again, trying to help them. So saying, oh, look, I read that this is going to be really helpful and make you feel better or help your immune system fight. Or, a friend of a friend of a friend had, colorectal cancer and this really helped them, so it will help your myeloma. So there can sometimes be those outside influences and expectations coming in as well. But really, a lot of it is around people wanting the degree of control and the wellness that we do lose when you're in the medical system.
You mentioned before the show about a patient that you've been looking after, and we've been talking a lot about the risks of combining with complementary medicine. Can you talk us through the situation that you were placed in with this patient?
Yeah, look, I think one of the things we do need to understand is, again, with a lot of these complementary therapies, which is really what we're talking about with the majority of our patients, these complementary therapies, is the information that's out there about them is not necessarily always as controlled or as robust as there is with medication. So a lot of these products, the information that's out there is not as good, and we sort of have to make some assumptions. So often we are looking at limited information, but if we look at this particular patient, he's a gentleman who's been around with us for a few years now. He came in newly diagnosed myeloma a few years ago, who was started on bortezomib, Velcade, as one of his primary treatments. And he so in the intervening time of him being diagnosed and being worked up for treatment, he had looked into things that he perceived maybe help him with his treatment, both in terms of helping the treatment, and also he was under the understanding he was going to be getting chemotherapy. So he had these the conventional expectations that he would have severe nausea and vomiting, that he would be completely wiped out, you know, for days on end with his therapy, that his immune system was going to be really beaten about. Now, what we know with Velcade is those things are not necessarily so, especially early on in treatment. But he came with a relatively long list of things that he was hoping to take. He had also, you know, at the recommendation of his daughter, had been to see a naturopath, which, you know, so he had been to see a naturopath, and they had given him a list of things that they said that they felt would really help his body in its way it handled the therapy. So one of the discussions was firstly around the fact that his therapy he was going to be having, which was Velcade and dexamethasone back then, they didn't have those really high risks of things like nausea and vomiting and fatigue early on in treatment and those sorts of things. So we were able to alleviate some of those concerns to begin with. But then we went through the list of things that that he was looking at potentially taking. And there were a few things of concern. So one of the things that he was looking at taking, he wanted to take high-dose vitamin C. So both as an antioxidant, because there's evidence out there to say that antioxidants may help with some of the toxicities of our conventional chemotherapies, not so much Velcade, but with some of the other therapies we use in other cancers. So he wanted to take high-dose vitamin C, and this is oral. It wasn't intravenous, but he wanted to take sort of 2 or 3 grams of vitamin C every day. He had been recommended to take a mushroom supplement. I'm just trying to think what else was on his list. Turmeric, and he was advised to go onto a whole food diet where he wasn't eating any processed foods or anything at all like that. So when we looked at those agents, that so if we to think about the three sort of main, I guess, supplemental ones he wanted to take was the vitamin C, the turmeric, and the mushroom supplement. Now, there's a lot of quite good evidence out there that says that vitamin C can actually inhibit the way that bortezomib or Velcade works. So our recommendation is we want the bortezomib, his cancer therapy, to be as effective as possible. And so if we add in something like vitamin C, which we know can potentially decrease the activity, that's not optimal. But we also know with the protocol he was on, he was taking having bortezomib day 1, 4, 8, and 11. So he was having it quite regularly. So there wasn't really a gap in the therapy where he could take the vitamin C. So our recommendation was don't take the vitamin C, not at those high doses. Like at the normal doses that you'd get with a multivitamin, that's not a problem at all. But those very high doses, we don't want to decrease the potential activity of the myeloma therapy. So we made that recommendation. The turmeric. So turmeric, again, is another supplement that's used a lot and has a lot of activity. But we do know that one thing that turmeric can do is it can affect how some drugs are processed in the body. So it can affect the enzymes or the processes in the body that break down the drugs once we have them in the body. Now, obviously, when we dose a medication, we dose it based on the activity we want it to have in the body. If we change how it's broken down in the body, we may either increase how quickly that drugs broken down in the body, which means it's not going to have the activity we want, or we might decrease or slow down that drug being broken down and removed from the body, which means we're going to get increased activity, which sounds like a really good idea, but also increased activity will lead to increased side effects. Mm. Now, the turmeric supplement, we know that it can decrease the rate that some drugs, including Velcade or bortezomib, is removed from the body. So if we slow down the rate that that bortezomib is removed from the body, we can get increased toxicity. So again, our recommendation around that was maybe don't take the turmeric around those doses. So again, we recommended against the turmeric supplement. The mushroom supplements, there was no issue with that. So some mushroom supplements do have issues with different medications, but in terms of the Velcade, there was no interactions or potential interactions or concerns that we could identify. So we said, if you wish to take those supplements, that's fine. They have antioxidant activity, but that doesn't affect how the Velcade works. It doesn't affect how the drug works in the body. So we said the mushroom supplement is perfectly fine to continue. And in terms of whole food diets or diets, we don't make recommendations around those as a pharmacist. We will recommend they talk to the dietitian. Our general rule is, you know, a healthy, well-rounded diet is obviously the best diet. So that was the recommendations we made when he was on his bortezomib. Now, he had his treatment. He responded well. He actually went forward and had a transplant. So he had a stem cell transplant. And so after that, he was no longer on the bortezomib. And he came back to us and said, look, you know, I just want to do something to help, you know, help make me feel better. How can I go with this? And we said, well, look, you're no longer on the bortezomib. Actually, you're not on therapy at all at the moment because you've had really good responses. You can take those supplements if you want. So if you want to take the vitamin C or the turmeric, or, you know, you want to look at different supplements, then come back to us. And he then started taking the turmeric and he felt that really helped in that period of time. Mm. So because his therapy changed, we can change our recommendations. I guess just to finish off this patient, he came back a couple of years later. As we know with myeloma, sometimes, you know, we need to change our therapies, and he needed to go back on therapy. And the recommendation was that he went on to lenalidomide. So again, he came back to us and said, well, this is what I'm taking. He wasn't taking the mushroom supplements anymore. He didn't feel that they were making any difference. He was taking the turmeric. He'd started on a couple of other supplements. One thing that he'd started taking was fish oil. He'd been told that would be good for his heart. He was at this stage a gentleman in his late 60s, I would think, at this stage. So he'd been told that fish oil would be really good for his heart. So he was taking turmeric, he was taking fish oil. I think that was probably all at that stage. And we reviewed it and we said, well, look, the problem with fish oil is in very, very high doses, it can actually affect how your platelets work. So as we all know, with platelets, we want them to do the job. And we also know that with patients who have been on therapy for a while, sometimes their platelets can be a little bit low. So we said, you can take the fish oil, but please keep it below a certain dose so that we don't have the activity against the platelets. And if at any point your platelets do drop or we have trouble with anything like that, then we may need to stop it. So we didn't have to stop the therapy, but we made recommendations over what we considered to be a safe dose. So, you know, we had a long relationship with this gentleman. In fact, he's still around, so we see him on and off in clinic. And I guess by being able to have that conversation, we can allow them to have that control, but hopefully minimise any potential risk on their therapies and their treatment.
It's great that he was able to be so open with you and come back at different points in his treatment trajectory and able to engage in the services and check with you before he started each. So that's great that he's built a rapport with you guys.
Yes. And often, I mean, we talk to these patients, but also we obviously nursing staff, we get a lot of referrals from nursing staff who are seeing these patients who, you know, they're coming in and they're saying, oh, when you guys as nurses are talking to patients, they're saying, oh, you know, I'm taking whatever or whatever. And then we get a lot of referrals, not necessarily directly from the patient, but from other healthcare workers as well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's great to have that relationship and to build that relationship with the patients.
Yeah. We're going to take a short break now. We'll be back shortly. Myeloma Australia's information and support groups are run right throughout Australia. Come along to connect with members of the myeloma community and learn about living well with myeloma from a variety of guest speakers, including our very own myeloma support nurses. To find your closest group, you can call head office on 03 9428 7444 or go to the calendar of events on our website www.myeloma.org.au. Welcome back to My Conversations. I'm Emma-Jane Furphy and I'm with Gail Rowan discussing complementary and alternative therapies. So how do patients know? I mean, they might go and see a naturopath and they get prescribed certain complementary medicines. How do they know what they've been prescribed is safe?
That's a really hard one because I guess for many people, you're relying on the knowledge of the professionals you're working with now, whether that be your what we would call our conventional healthcare team. So, you know, the doctors, the nurses, the pharmacists, the other people within the hospitals, or the your other providers like naturopaths or that sort of thing. Now, obviously, a lot of people get information off the internet. And the internet, as we know, can be a wormhole of information where you can find pretty much anything you want on the internet, and you can find completely opposing information that looks very, very strong. And it's like suddenly I've got two completely conflicting answers, and you will naturally go with the information that lends towards what you want. Naturopaths, I have a huge respect for them. They come from obviously the trying to change the therapies. Sometimes their focus is not so much on the cancer therapies, whereas our focus is on the cancer therapies and ensuring that they are the most effective they can be whilst being the safest they can be. Unfortunately, with many complementary therapies, whilst there may be studies out there, the robustness and the information behind the studies is sometimes not as strong as it is with conventional medication. So any medication that goes into therapy has gone through a very long process of very robust studies. And for some medications, it can be years between when they're first sort of found and then we find their place in therapy and how they're best used. And those studies are very strictly controlled, how they're run and how they're critiqued and how they're presented. So we have a very high level of information around those, whereas with a lot of therapies, even when we do have information, it can be not as robust in how it's presented. The other thing to remember is that many of these therapies, there's a huge number, it's a little bit hard to explain, but say if we take turmeric as our example, we think of turmeric, we can think of it as the powder that I get out of the cupboard and I add to my curry, but I can also think of it as the root that I go and buy from the you know, the Asian supermarket that I then use fresh or dried. So there's a huge different ways that it can present, and it can be the difference between whether it's the root of the plant or the leaf of the plant. But even within that turmeric root, it's not just one compound or just one thing. So when I give, or when we give a drug to a patient, it's one thing. We know if we're giving bortezomib, then it's bortezomib, and that's all that's in that vial of medication that we give or that we use. When we have turmeric, depending on which brand they use or whether they bought it at the local Asian supermarket or all that sort of thing, there could be anything up to 40 or 50 different compounds within that one particular one they're using. And if they change the brand they use or how they use it or whether it's fresh or whether it's dried and all those things, the actual I guess, of the ingredients or the compounds that are within that supplement may differ. So it's very, very hard to say what the exact activity is going to be, because every compound within that product will have a slightly different activity. And so we can't clearly say it's going to do X because we don't know exactly what's in the compound. So these things go in. And then, of course, we can go to the, I guess, the things that have no evidence behind them at all and are purely internet driven, or are purely pushed by people where there's no scientific evidence behind them at all. Not even folk remedies, because folk remedies, again, often do have some information behind them. Examples of this is you see on the internet people claiming that a particular type of water has a particular activity, and that, you know, if the water's been filtered in a certain way, it's going to have a certain activity. Now, you know, that's a very hard thing to justify and a very hard thing to say, that, you know, water isn't water. Now, obviously it can taste different depending on where it comes from, and the, you know, the salts or everything that's in it is really, but in reality, you know, claiming that a specific type of water from a specific place or that's gone through a specific filtration system has the ability to, change how your cells work in your body is, from my perspective, quite a stretch. And so when we get into some of these more, I'm not sure what term to use, but, you know, things that there is no evidence behind them, then that's a very hard thing to work with at times.
Mm-hmm. So when you're in the pharmacy and you're educating a patient on their medicines, and the patient tells you that they're using a complementary therapy, what are the main, you know, things that could concern you about, you know, when you're doing the education?
So our focus is always on ensuring that their conventional therapy, so the actual cancer therapy, is two things. It's the most efficacious it can be, so it's actually working how it should be, but also that it's safe. So that's always the line we will come from. So we have information databases that we can look at to find a lot of these natural products, and we will always look to see, is there any evidence, poor or at all, that it may make their actual therapy less effective? Because the thing we want to do is make sure that the therapy is the most effective it can be. So is there any data at all that it may potentially make it less effective? That's number one. And then our second one, is there any information that it may make our therapies more toxic or increase the side effects? And that's number two. So that's the way we go from. We want things to be safe, but we want them to be effective. And so that's where we look. If we see anything that we can see to indicate that either of those two things may be affected, then our recommendation is now against. Sometimes our recommendation is only avoiding it for a couple of days around a particular therapy. So now that we use bortezomib weekly, more often than we use it twice a week, we can say, well, things like vitamin C and green tea is another one that we know affects bortezomib therapy. We can say, just don't take it on the day of therapy. If you want to take it the other days in between, then that's fine, because it's only on the day of therapy that it's going to affect the activity of the drug. So if you want to drink green tea or take green tea supplements or vitamin C, that's fine, you know, on the days you're not having your bortezomib. But if it's something that we know is going to have a longer effect, we may say avoid for a couple of days either side, or we may, and especially with oral therapies where there are, you know, things like, say, lenalidomide, where you're on it every day, we may have to say, well, we actually would suggest you don't take it at all because it may affect that thing. As I said, things that affect, say, your clotting, it may only be if your platelet counts are off. We say, well, you need to not take it if your platelet counts are off. If there's no evidence that it's going to affect the therapy, and there's no evidence that the actual supplement itself is unsafe, then we say we don't have a concern. So we say, as far as we can see, this supplement appears to be safe for you to take. And that's often what we do. There is occasionally things that we know that's not necessarily going to affect a patient's therapy, but are innately unsafe of themselves. And so we would then just make the safety recommendation, irrespective of their cancer therapy, that they don't take it at all. But that's what we look for. We don't tend to use the information that's come from the internet in a general search because, as I say, there's no scrutiny behind that data. Mm. So the information we use is coming from places where it has been had some scrutiny behind it.
Yeah. And what would your take-home message be to people that are considering using complementary therapies or alternative therapies?
I guess my take-home message is talk to your team. Like, no one is going to just turn around and flat out say no, you shouldn't be doing that in 99% of circumstances. So talk to your nursing team, talk to your pharmacists if you're seeing your pharmacist, talk to your medical staff. You know, we all work together, and we're all, so the main thing is to have the conversation. So not to be afraid to say, I want to take something or I am taking something. Have the conversation, because we're not trying to stop people doing this. We're just trying to make sure that it's done in the safest way for the patient. So the most, I guess my take-home message is to have the conversation. And if you are asked, like if you're in a clinic and the nurses are chatting to you and they say, oh, look, are you taking anything? Don't be afraid to say, yes, I am. Because you don't need to be afraid that we're automatically going to say no. And yeah. We will work with people to enable them to hopefully help themselves.
That's fantastic advice. Thank you, Gail, for coming on the show today and sharing your knowledge on complementary and alternative therapies. I certainly learned a lot, and we appreciate your time today.
That's no problem at all.
Thanks for listening to this episode of My Conversations. We'd love to hear from you, so send us your questions or topic ideas to our email address, nurses@myeloma.org.au. Whilst the advice and opinions of our guests is welcomed, this podcast provides general information and is not intended to replace medical care or the advice of your treating team. Please talk to your doctor if you have any questions about your diagnosis or treatment. Your doctor can answer your questions, talk with you about your treatment goals, and provide you with extra support.